Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:33 p.m. Friday, February 21st. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Members present today are Senator Geisel, Senator Schauer, myself, Senator Wilson. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Von Imhoff and Senator Begich are excused for this afternoon. This afternoon, we'll take up Senate Bill 134, Medicaid Coverage for Licensed Counselors, by myself, Senator Wilson. This is our first time hearing the bill. We'll take an overview of the bill, have a sectional analysis, and take public testimony with invited testimony. Here to present the bill is my trustee staff, Gary Zepp. We'll invite Mr. Zepp to the table and ask himself to place himself on the record, and he may begin when ready. We also expect the Department of Health and Social Services to address the bill as well. And also here in the room to and on phone to take questions are Jennifer Monroe Johnson, the director of the Division of Behavioral Health, Commissioner Al Wall is here in the room. I'm not sure if Ms. Brown is with us, but she may be in the same room as Director Monroe. Jamie, and there she's a deputy director of Division of Behavioral Health, Jamie Walker, Division of Healthcare Services. Melissa Hill is here, and I also see Ms. Chambers is also here in the room from the Division of Licensing from Commerce. Mr. Zepp, you may begin when ready.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Gary Zepp, staff to Senator David Wilson. This afternoon, we're presenting Senate Bill 134. The proposed legislation would add licensed professional counseling to the Medicaid optional services. This concept is to add more behavioral health counseling services to expand capacity and utilization within Alaska. The expansion of behavioral health care professionals is projected to reduce wait times, improve the quality of care in the appropriate settings, and will cost less than behavioral health care in our emergency rooms across our state. Currently, we're hearing about anywhere from 3 to 6 months for a wait time for Medicaid clients to see a licensed behavioral health care professional counselor if they're lucky enough to find a provider that will see Medicaid patients, mostly because of the lack of capacity in the workforce itself. I think we've all seen examples of behavioral health shortages that are revealed to us in our daily lives through stories in the media, what you may see, and what you may have experienced or witnessed in your own communities. The licensed professional counselors are a valuable, cost-effective part of treatment for behavioral health. This proposed legislation is a piece of the behavioral health capacity that already includes licensed social workers, PhD psychologists, prescribing nurse practitioners, and medical doctors like psychiatrists and primary care physicians. Senate Bill 134, this would provide the appropriate care with the appropriate provider. Many people are familiar with the term mental health. Mental health covers many of the same issues as behavioral health, but this term only encompasses the biological component of this aspect of wellness. The term behavioral health encompasses all contributions to mental wellness, including substances and their abuse, behavioral issues, habits, and other external forces. Why Medicaid clients and who are they? Medicaid provides health coverage for the long-term care services for Alaska's most vulnerable children, seniors, people with disabilities, pregnant women, and very low income or working poor. Medicaid clients have difficulties finding access to behavioral health care and often have to wait 3 to 6 months for appointments. So you can imagine a person in crisis who cannot find behavioral health care access or told it's available in 3 or 4 months. So what are their options? It's the Alaska's emergency rooms. These are facilities that Medicaid clients with behavioral health problems show up in a crisis state. Senate Bill 134 would directly impact the lives of our most vulnerable population of citizens, and our emergency rooms have become overwhelmed with volumes of emergency situations regarding behavioral health. The emergency rooms in Alaska are not usually equipped to handle this type of service. And the leading cause of is an emergency room for behavioral health Medicaid clients is alcohol disorders and the associated ailments. Often Medicaid clients have nowhere else to go due to the lack of access and the lack of capacity, which causes patients to stay much longer in emergency rooms and hospitals than they should. And typically, if a Medicaid client is in a stage of crisis and there is no access to the appropriate care, they leave and the cycle repeats itself. They will be back at the emergency room because they're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The next few slides are going to reflect some of the statistics concerning the lack of behavioral health care both nationally and within Alaska. Approximately 70% of Americans who need behavioral health services do not receive treatment. For substance abuse disorders, it's about 92% that typically do not receive treatment. And adults with serious mental health issues, approximately 66% do not receive behavioral health treatment. And you may not know this, but untreated behavioral health issues can increase the risk of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, stroke, Alzheimer's disease, osteoporosis, pancreatic disease, and hypertension. Besides the unintended consequences of folks who need behavioral health and don't receive it, without treatment in a timely manner, this can often lead to interactions with the police, the court systems, and the correctional facilities within our state. Approximately 42% of state prisoners have a mental illness, and 20% are considered severely and persistently mentally ill. The most common behavioral issues for children are attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, anxiety, and depression. A child diagnosed with depression has approximately 74% of having a co-disorder like anxiety. If a child diagnosed with depression and anxiety disorder is not treated, if a child is diagnosed with depression and anxiety disorders, if not treated, they usually increase over time and the child's conditions worsen. Boys are more likely than girls to have a mental, behavioral, or developmental disorder, and children living below the poverty line have a 22% more likelihood of a mental, behavioral, or developmental disorder. Mental disorders among children can cause serious challenges in a way children typically learn, behave, or handle their emotions, which causes distress and problems throughout the day. This is distressing, and you've probably heard this previously, but according to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, in Alaska, suicide is the number one leading cause of death for ages 15 to 24. Nine times as many people die by suicide in Alaska in 2017 than in alcohol-related motor vehicle accidents. Alaska's suicide rate is 52% higher than the national average. Later in our presentation, the expert testimony will be able to shed a light on the workforce shortage of behavioral health care professionals available to treat Medicaid clients and Alaskans in general. The 2016 Alaska Behavioral Health Systems Assessment reported an estimated 145,000 plus adult Alaskans, roughly 20% of the state's population, are in need of behavioral health services. Despite the estimated need for mental health care in Alaska, the ratio of mental health providers to population is very low compared to national levels. Additionally, most behavioral health professionals work in urban areas, such that the remote areas of the state have even lower provider population ratios. Understanding the magnitude, composition, and geographical scope of the mental health provider shortage in Alaska is seen as the great first step in developing effective, targeted solutions to increase workforce capacity by adding licensed professional counselors. The chart above reflects the total cost of what the state paid to emergency rooms in Alaska in 2016 through 2019 for Alaska's Medicaid clients. The costs have increased by $47.1 million, or 20.1% over the last 4 years. This is staggering. The second stat shows the top utilizers and what the impact is to Alaska's The second stat shows the top utilizers and what the impact is to the Alaska Medicaid program and visits to the ER of at least 10 times and sometimes as many as 50 visits per year. The average cost for the 2.7% top utilizers is $22,604 per year. You can see where the costs are heading in the future. We need to improve Medicaid programs and provide increased quality and become more cost efficient. We believe, and other healthcare providers in Alaska agree, by adding more licensed professional counseling services, we have a chance to improve these outcomes. We have to do something different in Alaska to stop this trend. With the federal approval of the 1115 waiver for behavioral health services, adding licensed professional counselors to the mix of behavioral health care professionals offers an opportunity to expand capacity, increase the quality of care, lower the cost versus the crisis mode platinum level cost that the state is already paying. And again, I'll repeat, these are the costs that the state has already paid for Medicaid clients for behavioral health services. This chart shows the 2016-2019, the number of Medicaid clients has actually gone down by 6,614, or 9.6% over those 4 years. But as you can see from the previous slide, the costs are rising. The most common diagnosis for the top 2.7% super utilizers are alcohol-related disorders. The four-year average for the super utilizers is at 2.4%, and it's 1,609 people at $43.5 million. The top 2.7% were likely to be between 20 and 59 years old. 61% are females, 39% males. And the four-year average for the top 10.77% of super utilizers, we're talking about 7,204 people, the average annual cost is $103.4 million. This averages out to about $14,332 per person. Mondays are the most common days for a visit to the emergency room. And if you think about this, approximately $4,300 is the estimated cost for a behavioral health assessment in Alaska's emergency rooms versus $150 to $250 an hour for clinical work for a licensed professional counselor. And we need to provide the appropriate care with the appropriate health care providers. Senate Bill 134 has the ability to lower costs for the Medicaid clients' behavioral health services that, again, we are already paying to our emergency rooms, but in a crisis state at a platinum level cost. We'd like to sincerely thank our stakeholders and presenters for their support of Senate Bill 134. And as you can see, we have a wide variety of stakeholders that we've engaged with and that are supporting Senate Bill 134. Adding licensed professional counselors to the Medicaid optional services. We respectfully ask you to join us and support Senate Bill 134. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Zepp at this time? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Zepp. Well, I'd like to invite the department, I think, is going to provide a few words. We'll ask Deputy Commissioner Al Wall. And I think Director of Behavioral Health, Jennifer Monroe, is also on the line to be your trustee aide in this matter as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Albert Wall. I'm the Deputy Director of the Department of Health and Social Services. I would like to give an opportunity for Jen Moreau, the Director of Behavioral Health, and any of her staff that might have a prepared statement, because we're not in the same room, and I'm not quite sure if she's can hear us or is going to make statement first. I don't want to walk on.
Hi, for the record, this is Jennifer Moreau, and I am the director of the Division of Behavioral Health, and I just would like to check if I might to make sure that folks can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you, Director Monroe.
Thank you very much, Chair Wilson. Through the chair, I just would like to thank Senator Wilson for sponsoring this bill. The Division of Behavioral Health does stand ready to assist Senator Wilson with this proposed legislation, and we're eager to provide any information that's available to us for full consideration of this bill. The division would like to call out some of the potential benefits of this bill. This bill could expand access to care for eligible Alaskans statewide, and I'd like to especially call out the potential for expanded access in remote rural communities and for individuals experiencing mild to moderate disturbances. There is also the potential decrease over time of psychiatric emergency services and acute care hospital services. Licensed professional counselors will also be able to provide ESPRT, that screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment, which is a key element to our continuum of care. And lastly, I'd like to call out that by making this provider type available to eligible Alaskans, it also provides an opportunity for families to interact at a smaller, kind of more intimate setting where families might be more comfortable receiving services. So with that, I would hand it over to folks in the room, but just wanted to thank again Senator Wilson for sponsoring this legislation.
Thank you. Director Monroe, can you also talk about how this may integrate with the 1115 waiver?
Hi, thank you, Senator Wilson, through the chair. yes, the 1115 waiver, thank you for asking about that. The 1115 waiver is a mechanism by which we can fully develop the full continuum of care. And the whole driver behind the 1115 is to reduce the reliance on the acute end of care. And so expanding access, especially for Medicaid recipients experiencing mild to moderate disturbances, including disruption in social determinants of health, has the potential to prevent future need of higher and more expensive levels of care.
Thank you. Is there any other questions to the department, committee members? Seeing none, thank you, Director Monroe and Deputy Commissioner Wall for being here and available.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the committee.
All right. Next up for invite testimony, we have, who's first? Second. I think John Asada is on deck. You can state your name and who you are representing and...
Great. Good afternoon, Committee Chair Wilson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Tezada, and I'm the Policy Integration Director at the Alaska Primary Care Association. Prior to this role, I spent 9 years on staff at the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center. One of my roles there was supporting the development of behavioral health integration programs. Also in line to queue this afternoon, I just wanted to call out Savella Love, who is an LCSW. And she is also APCA's Behavioral Health Integration Coordinator. She specifically supports health centers across the state in integrating behavioral health into their clinic operations, addressing clinical quality, and developing behavioral health staff. APCA supports the operations and development of Alaska's 27 community health centers. Our members voted to support SB 34 and will work actively to support its passage. Adding Medicaid reimbursement for LPCs has been a top priority in our efforts to expand access to behavioral health for many years. To put our role into a little bit of perspective, we serve a total of 113,000 patients per year through about 560,000 visits at 160 clinic sites around the state. We serve 10% of Alaskans. About 85% of our patients have incomes at under 200% of the federal poverty level. around 20% of all Alaskans enrolled in Medicaid get their primary care at a CHC. About 10% of our patients come in primarily for mild and moderate behavioral health care, and 15% of all of our visits in a year are for behavioral health. And we employ over 180 behavioral health providers of all types in our clinics throughout the state. I was asked today to provide remarks that specifically look at the role of LPCs in behavioral health services, why reimbursement for LPCs is vital in addressing the demand for behavioral health services, and how they actually provide care and could ultimately save Medicaid money by diverting patients away from emergency rooms and more costly care. I was also asked to evaluate the fiscal note, but because we got that earlier this week, we're still looking closely at how it would pertain to the primary care system as opposed to the behavioral health system that I think it primarily pertains to. Basically, LPCs are a valuable, cost-effective component of team-based, whole-person primary care. And to us, that is primary care that's built around medical, dental, behavioral health, pharmacy, and support providers working to ensure patients get all the care they need and supporting them in the management of their health and their chronic conditions. Making LPCs billable under Medicaid will expand access to care for Alaskans in lower-cost primary care settings. We understand that passing the bill is the first step, and implementation for FQHCs will involve changes in regulation. We've already started conversations with DHSS on changes that would be required for FQHCs to be able to bill for LPCs under the bundled payment model, the prospective payment service system under which we operate. And I wanted to say that the bill was an important component of the Medicaid reforms that were outlined in the 2016 SB 74 to expand provider types to increase access to behavioral health services, not just for community behavioral health providers who were reimbursed for providing care for ongoing severe behavioral health and substance abuse issues, but also for providers such as FQHCs that specialize in providing mild and moderate community-based care. LPCs are an important provider type within a behavioral health team that includes LCSWs, psychologists, prescribing nurse MPs, and MDs. Each one has a unique role. In 2017, our health centers reported a deficit of 12 to 18 behavioral health providers. Conservatively, with that, they could support care for another 6,000 to 9,000 additional patients statewide. From a clinical standpoint, LPCs are a vital provider type to provide one-on-one counseling services to patients in conjunction with LCSWs. CHCs are already using LPCs in their practice to provide school-based services, counseling services, and in supporting care coordination for patients. The addition of LPCs will increase overall provider retention and satisfaction, which is another important challenge to healthcare in Alaska. All medical providers are more likely to stay in place when there is a full care team of professionals working at the top of their licensure. The CHC team-based model will gain increased efficiency and support to save Medicaid funds by being fully staffed and reimbursed for the first time. I wanted to comment that CHCs have received considerable federal investment to expand behavioral health services and support substance use treatment services in the primary care setting. We're required by federal law to provide behavioral health that's integrated with medical, dental, pharmacy, and other services. Adding LPCs to the roster of billable providers enables health centers to make their services more sustainable. Right now, the LPCs that we employ throughout the state are funded through non-sustainable federal grants, local grants, private grants, and from operating income. None of these are sustainable funding sources. And the ability to which they can provide one-on-one counseling is also greatly limited because of the funding sources that are currently in place. Finally, on what they actually do and how they do it, mild and moderate anxiety and depression are co-occurring conditions with chronic conditions, including diabetes and hypertension. LPCs are a vital provider that can provide typically short-term counseling support that supports the work of other medical, dental, and pharmacy team members in stabilizing and improving the health of emergent patients and assisting them in managing their chronic conditions over time. LPCs, as a vital provider, provide a range of behavioral health services in schools across the state. At this time, none of that care is reimbursed. In meetings with legislators that our health centers had yesterday, we were asked to describe the work that an LPC would do as part of a collaborative team, and I just wanted to provide two examples. In an integrated clinical setting, we might have a patient with diabetes under management. We'd call that patient if we hadn't heard from them in a period just to make sure that their diabetes was still under control, or that patient might come in if they were having health problems and their blood sugar wasn't under control. As the attending medical or dental provider might discover, the patient would be showing signs of depression or anxiety that could affect their ability to follow their treatment plan. This is the point at which an LPC would be called in to provide counseling support to the patient for one or more sessions. In these specific sessions, the LPC may work with the patient around the personal issues affecting their overall health, teach behavioral skills that would help them, and also address social issues, you know, maybe the loss of employment or a change in housing. Working together, the goal of the provider team is to assist the patient in getting back on track with their treatment plan, improve their mental health, and keep them from seeking emergency care. In the instance of care provided in school-based settings, the role of the LPC is very important. It can be to provide individual counseling in schools, to provide behavioral health skills training to students, and also training teachers and other community professionals on how to support their students. These sessions occur as referred by school staff, in regular visits to schools, and in community incidents that include suicide and other serious disruptions. We support SB 134. We believe it addresses the need in Alaska's response to behavioral health. It lends sustainability to efforts that are already underway and offers another tool in our response to improving care and lowering its cost. And we thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Rosada? Thank you, sir. Your next up is Kevin Munson from Mass Health Services.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kevin Munson. I am the Chief Executive Officer for Matsu Health Services, located in Wasilla, Alaska. We are both a federally qualified community health center, and we also operate a community behavioral health program funded by the state of Alaska. I am currently sitting as the chair of the Alaska Primary Care Association and sit on the executive committee for the Alaska Behavioral Health Association. I am also a licensed professional counselor. My training and background actually is as a marriage and family therapist, but I'm licensed as a licensed professional counselor and have been in the state for some 32 years practicing both in behavioral health and in primary care. My background prior to that was in the Midwest. I worked in a variety of settings ranging from inpatient to community-based care to public health, to street social work, to a lot of other activities. And I thank Senator Wilson for the opportunity to speak to this bill, because it has been a long-standing desire of mine to see LPCs, LMFTs, and other licensed mental health professionals to be able to be added to the list of credible professionals to serve the needs of our most vulnerable Alaskans. You've heard a lot of different information about access, and so let me speak a little bit about that for a moment, and somewhat go a little bit off topic to a story, but I think it's relevant. When I was in college, our university built a brand new, absolutely fantastic and lovely library that was the greatest of high tech at the time. And as part of that design, they had these beautiful sidewalks that they were going to put into place and shrubbery and whatnot in order to provide access to their library. Some wise soul, though, having looked at the rest of the university and seeing all of the lovely sidewalks and then all of the muddy paths that didn't follow the sidewalks, decided to not put the sidewalks in, but rather to wait and to watch how the students would actually walk to go use their library. And when they figured that out, then they laid the sidewalks, and then all of the lovely grass and all of the lovely shrubbery was able to be preserved and not trampled by the students who were trying to get access in a way that didn't make sense for how the system was designed. Our mental health system was designed a fairly long time ago, and it was put into place in statute, it was put into place in regulation, and it was put into place in practice. SB 74 provided the opportunity for us to really take a step back and do some transformational thinking around how we might redesign, because clearly the way in which Alaskans are currently in the modern age using things versus where we have the things that we want them to use, there's a real serious mismatch. And as you've seen, many of our citizens use the emergency room to meet their behavioral health needs. In large part, that's because they don't have readily and easy access to the behavioral health services that they need in the typical locations where they're going to go and try and get it. And so if the licensed professional counselors are no longer siloed, no longer only permitted to practice in certain very narrow areas as it relates to Medicaid, which is pretty much limited to those grant-funded community behavioral health entities, and SB 74 has somewhat uncoupled that grant requirement, but this is a piece of also making the subsequent statutory changes in order to align the system with that intent, and then we'll have regulatory development that will help us to make sure that we have the appropriate professionals placed in the appropriate locations where our citizens are most likely going to be able to use them. It's a rather chilling statistic. You heard of some statistics about suicide. One of the fundamental problems is that some 54%, I believe, of individuals who complete suicide have had a primary care visit in the previous 30 days. It's not that the primary care provider may not have wanted to ask about that, may have even asked about that. But the primary care provider may have also then made a referral for that individual to go get services and help at a local mental health center or a counseling agency. Statistics tell us that 90% of those referrals end up going nowhere because the person just simply drops out of the system. Within the federally qualified community health center system, we have integrated care where those individuals can actually have a warm handoff to an existing counselor within the context of primary care. There are several private practices in the state of Alaska that also have counselors that do that, but they're paying those counselors because they think it's the right thing to do and it's a good thing to do, and they're not getting reimbursed for that, particularly for their Medicaid folks, because those are not eligible providers. So it's not an expandable, replicable model. I currently employ 6 licensed clinical social workers. Last year, I lost one of my licensed clinical social workers. It took me 9 months to find another one. In that 9 months, I had 5 opportunities to hire licensed professional counselors to fill that particular slot that had we had a reimbursable model that we could have hired that individual, because I have no grant money to fund those 5, 6 licensed clinical social workers. They're funded by the degree of effort and work that they do, reimbursable through Medicaid, third party, and Medicare. Had I had a funding stream for a licensed professional counselor, since much of our business is Medicaid, I could have replaced that licensed clinical social worker in 30 to 60 days instead of 11 months. So it is really about access. It's about giving our citizens access when they want it and when they need it. Most folks don't wake up in the morning and say, huh, I think I will go see a counselor today. That particular desire is usually occasioned by some kind of acute crisis. A kid gets suspended from school. A partner decides to announce a divorce or a departure. A job is lost. Somebody gets a DUI. Those are the time and circumstances in which somebody is now perhaps ready, willing, but not necessarily able to go get help. And the reason they're not able to go get help is it because we have many of our helpers siloed in places that they don't think about going and using, can't get in because our behavioral health system is actually designed to treat and to take care of, as it should, our most impaired, our most at risk, and our most in need. But that leaves the individuals who are mild to moderate without really viable resources. Those viable resources can be created if there is a business model for FQHCs, for counseling programs, for primary care practices, for group practices, to be able to make it a viable business proposition to take care of the Medicaid population. And by setting the and removing the statutory barrier to LPCs being able to become that, we begin, as we have with the LPCs and the LCSWs, to create a pathway to regulatory development so that we can provide access to the citizens who need care. Because if they have access when they need it, at that initial crisis, at that initial point of need, you know, perhaps that marriage ends up getting saved, that relationship ends up getting put back together. Those kids no longer become children of divorce or children of breakup. They no longer have disruptions to their educational opportunities. They no longer have the other risk. They no longer develop ACEs scores because we've been able to intervene. So not only do we take care of people at the point of their need, but we also can avoid further much higher costs, engagement with OCS, engagement with DJJ, engagement with the courts, all because we provided an appropriate access to a service at the place that a citizen was likely to go ask for it and go need it at a time when they actually needed it. I think the next thing is really around the notion of best practice. It's clear from the research that's been developed in a variety of states as well as federally, in that the best way in which people are well taken care of is if they have a primary care home, and if they have a team of individuals who are able to provide them with wraparound kind of services, one of which is that of behavioral health. We have seen enormous success with our individuals who not just have behavioral health problems, that we're able to address their anxiety, we're able to address the challenging parenting issues that they might have, for example, but we're also able to intervene around lifestyle choices and lifestyle management and change management around individuals who have chronic medical conditions. We've had a variety of folks with severe diabetes who have had an enormous difficulty making lifestyle change. It's hard. And the primary care physician has limited time and, quite frankly, limited skill in terms of how to do change management. But the behavioral health specialist, that's what they do every day. And they have the time. And so they're able to step in. They're able to talk with that person about how to make small, incremental changes that eventually turn into large lifestyle changes that change the trajectory of their diabetic care. They're able to get their A1Cs under control. They're able to lose the weight. They are able to develop the exercise regime and program. We have been operating since 2013 a depression care management model called the Impact Model within our primary care environment that involves the collaboration of our primary care provider, a licensed professional, not a licensed professional counselor because we've got to use LCSWs, as our behavioral health consultant, and a psychiatrist as a consultant, not as a treater. And we have seen enormous improvements in being able to provide treatment and see changes in individuals with depression. They have eased their depression, they've gone back to work, they've put their relationships back together, all because we were able to provide that level of intervention. As I said, I currently employ roughly six LCSWs. If you could wave your magic wand, and if LPCs could bill Medicaid, I could add three more tomorrow and keep them incredibly busy. At this particular point, we're able to get folks in within a week to sometimes 2 weeks. We could reduce that to be able to get them in terms of a day to a couple of days, and make a much bigger and better impact. I think the final thing I would like to speak to is a notion of kind of equity, and that is that if you were to look at a licensed clinical social worker, you were to look at a licensed marriage and family therapist, or you were to look at a licensed professional counselor, assuming that they all had a reasonable equivalency of seasoning in the field, and you were to look at the work that they would do with an individual as they do the counseling or a family, you would not be able to tell the difference if you were watching them through a one-way glass or through a video camera. You would not be able to tell the difference between what the LCSW is or does. You wouldn't know the letters behind their name. You wouldn't know which one was the LMFT. You wouldn't know which one was the LPC. They're all well-trained, well-seasoned, competent behavioral health professionals. And the fact that we have a system that recognizes some of the credentials only because those folks existed at the time that the regulation was being drafted, and so they got themselves there because they were there, and subsequent professionals whose credibility was developed later had been excluded from participation in the process simply because we were late to the party. And we're now in the process of giving LCSWs independent practice, LMFTs independent practice. It also makes sense to give LPCs independent practice as well. And I think with that, Senator Wilson, I will be more than happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Munson? No. Nope. Thank you, sir, for your time and your testimony today. Now next, we'll open up public testimony. We have a few folks here. Not many here to sign up for public testimony, so we'll do 3 minutes a person. I think the first person here is Mr. Anderson. You want to state your name for the record and plan three minutes for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Patrick Anderson. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for the Rural Alaska Community Action Program. I'm a little old, humble country lawyer. That was my profession and my practice, but in 2003, I shifted to managing rural health care systems. What Mr. Zepp was talking about and what the other witnesses were talking about, I'd love to have available in our rural communities. We currently serve the hard to serve, the 20% of individuals that Mr. Zepp referred to, Abram Maslow referred to them as the continental divide, the very hard to serve who will need professional services. As the CEO of RuralCAP, we serve those individuals, both within Anchorage and within rural Alaska. It is very difficult to provide any such services. We currently have a grant to provide behavioral health services for our Head Start population. We operate 24 of those. Our children go without basic services. Because we don't have the licensed professionals in rural Alaska. When I was the executive director at Chugachmute, we had two behavioral health aides in training. It's difficult. It took 4 years of education, which takes a lot more years when you're working from a remote environment. And then to have the skill level and the supervision is complex. Our Carluck Manor, our Sitka Place residents are the really hard to serve. We have a clinical team. I can tell you that with the dearth of professionals right now, that my staff is being poached constantly. I've had to raise salaries many times. I've had to raise offers many times. The salary level for higher level clinicians who are licensed goes up. So LPCs, you can probably get at a lesser rate because you can't bill enough for those. I'm here just to advocate for what seems to me to be a wonderful idea, that is to open the roles to the additional 717, I believe, that Mr. Zepp spoke about. We can utilize them, and we will still be short, especially in rural Alaska. I spent 8 years on the American Indian Alaska Native Task Force on Suicide Prevention. It is disheartening every day to me to see that lots of needs go unserved in rural Alaska. Rural CAP is currently initiating at board direction an initiative referred to as Whole Community Healing. We will need the advice of professionals, but we will also need the engagement of communities. If you're familiar with Dr. Martin Seligman and the concepts of learned helplessness, I'm afraid that with the dearth of services and the dearth of hope in rural Alaska, that learned helplessness will become the norm. We tried to think about addressing a cohort, a cluster of three suicides in Hooper Bay, accompanying a cluster of about four or five years ago. This is real, and I encourage you to support, and I do certainly unequivocally wholly support the expansion of the ranks to licensed professionals. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison. We'll go to the phone lines. We have Savila Love. If you could state your name and affiliation, plan 3 minutes for your testimony.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My name is Savila Love. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I have spent my 20-year clinical career on the front lines of integration in both rural and urban Alaska, serving in primary care clinics, developing cutting-edge intervention programs throughout Alaska. And I've even worked at API exclusively with suicidal rural patients, and 80% of the people I personally worked with could have been avoidable admissions if they had the preventative care that they needed in primary care. Now, you heard the numbers of those going unseen by behavioral health before. I have been this behavioral health provider capturing those patients who would not otherwise have been seen or be willing to be seen and accept that outside referral to behavioral health and get that help that they needed, because the care was given at their first place of access, which is not specialty standalone behavioral health or treatment centers. It is in our primary care clinics. I now work as the Alaska Primary Care Association's integration coordinator, and that means it's my job to provide training in all the travel I do to health centers all over Alaska to teach them how to implement a team-based integrated care model by incorporating behavioral health into their daily provision of health care services. So I get to hear and see the struggles of our health centers that they have in regards to the quality of care they are able to give. And the number one biggest problem is a lack of access to billable, financially sustainable behavioral health providers. So this is what my clinics are telling me. Savila, we've looked across the country for LCSWs. We're paying over $80,000 a year starting salary plus loan repayment options, and we still cannot find an LCSW or a psychologist to fill this primary care role. We're desperate, and our patients are desperate for the appropriate care. I also hear, Savila, I have five LPCs who would jump at this position that I've had open for over a year, but I can't hire them because once my grant runs out, who's going to pay their salary? I also hear this. Savila, my medical staff, they're drowning in behavioral health issues, and they can't properly address them without the help that they need, and it's burning them out. My turnover rates are killing the continuity of care that we can give. It's not just mental health issues. It's our chronic care patients, too. They need behavioral health support so they can make the lifestyle changes they need to get healthy. Sevilla, why can't we bill for LPCs in primary care? Help us. So our health centers are given this massive task requiring a variety of tools, but are allegorically told that they can only use a hammer to build their integrated behavioral health programs. This is inadequate. My answers to their questions are inadequate. Health centers are left empty-handed for the resource that they desperately need. And I want to end with this. When we walk into a clinic, we bring not just our illness, but we bring our whole self and our lifestyle that will impact the outcomes of our healing and the community wellness as a whole. So therefore, I want to impress this one thing to you today. Every primary care visit is a behavioral health visit, and we must equip our health centers with the ability to meet this need by allowing LPCs to become billable providers in our primary care clinics. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Robin Menard from the Mattel Health Foundation, Wasilla.
Good afternoon, Senator Wilson and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Robin Menard, and I serve as Chief Communications Officer for the Mat-Su Health Foundation. The foundation shares ownership in Mat-Su Regional Medical Center, and we invest our share of the profits back into the community in order to meet our mission, which is to improve the health and wellness of Alaskans living in the Mat-Su. I am testifying today in full support of Senate Bill 134. This bill is crucial because it will help address an important health issue facing Mat-Su residents every day, mental health and substance abuse problems. Licensed professional counselors are key behavioral health providers who can help with these problems. We know these are hard issues for Mat-Su residents because they told us this in our last two community health needs assessments. In 2013, residents and professionals said the top five health challenges they face are alcohol and substance use, children experiencing trauma and violence, depression and suicide, domestic violence and sexual assault, and lack of access to behavioral health care. During that same assessment, we met with school nurses throughout the borough, and they told us that there was a 4 to 8 month waiting list for children and families with Medicaid to see a counselor. Unfortunately, not much has changed since then. There is still a very long wait. And as other testifiers have pointed out, when these problems present themselves, people need help now. You can't expect them to go on an 8 month waiting list. The fact of the matter is there are not enough mental health providers in Mat-Su or in Alaska. Currently, we have only one provider for every 860 residents. A comparison with the top U.S. performer on this measurement is one for every 330 residents. It's crucial that our residents have access to behavioral health providers so that they can get care early, long before their problems escalate into the crisis stage. Currently, Mat-Su Regional Medical Center in our community is inundated with residents who are in crisis related to behavioral health. In 2016, there were almost 1,200 residents seen in the emergency department with a primary behavioral health care diagnosis, and those 1,200 people had over 3,000 visits. 46% of those were paid by Medicaid. The top diagnoses were suicidal ideation and self-harm, alcohol-related disorders, delirium, dementia, and cognitive disorders. The cost for those visits was $14 million just in facility charges. If we can intervene earlier with a system where all residents can get immediate access to care, we can save pain and suffering as well as money. And to put that into context, an individual session for Medicaid for counseling might be around $75, while an average charge for a behavioral health emergency department visit is $4,370. Yes, a person needs more than one behavioral health visit, but even if they have 10 visits at $750, you'd be saving $3,600 on just that one patient, not to mention all the suffering that people go through. The prevalence of mental health and substance abuse problems and crises is increasing in Mat-Su and statewide. This legislation could bring the appropriate level of care to people who need help when a problem first presents. Here at the Foundation, we're actively doing our part to build a complete behavioral health continuum of care that is fully staffed with caring professionals who meet the needs of our residents. We invest to help our local nonprofits continue to provide badly needed services.
Ms. Menard?
We provide scholarships to train new behavioral health providers. And we worked with Mat-Su Regional Medical Center to create the newly opened behavioral health care wing. as exciting as this is, we should be focusing upstream on prevention, and allowing LPCs to bill Medicaid is one way to do that. We're trying to keep people out of expensive emergency rooms and institutional care, and SB 134 will help achieve this goal, so we strongly support its passage. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Menard. Next, we have Don Black from Bethel. If you could state your name and affiliation, plan 3 minutes for your testimony. Mr. Black, are you with us? Oh, well, he may have dropped off. Next, we'll go to Sedona. Deborah Hamilton, if you could state your name and affiliation and plan 3 minutes for your testimony. You may begin when you're ready.
Good afternoon. Through the chair, thank you so much, Senator Wilson, Senator Giesel, and Senator Schauer for considering this bill. My name is Deborah Hamilton, and I live in Soldotna and currently work at New Hope Counseling Center, where I am the executive director and have been a professional counselor since 2003. We are on the campus of Alaska Christian College, and Alaska Christian College services predominantly a young adult Alaska Native population ages 18 to 25. We provide services to those students while they're in attendance at Alaska Christian College. In addition, we also are open to the community and provide services to the members of the Kenai Peninsula in marriage, family, individual counseling, family counseling, substance abuse counseling, and a variety of services. I also have been serving on the board of professional counselors since 2013 and currently serve as the chair. I primarily wanted to just add my support for Senate Bill 134 and just support the other recommendations and considerations that have already been presented. I wanted to share the qualifications of professional counselors to ensure that the quality of services received would be of great quality and professionalism and the ability to treat the mental health conditions that have been discussed. We are master's level counselors who have an extensive array of training and required coursework, and in addition, we do continuing education to continue to specialize in areas such as substance abuse and trauma, which is high within our state. Currently, we have 732 active licensed professional counselors serving in our state, with 447 approved supervisors actively training and supervising the next generation of LPCs. So I'd like to just thank you for your consideration, your time, and your investment. I do agree that there is a vacuum of accessibility to services and hope that you would strongly consider supporting this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I see anyone else on the phone. Is there anyone else in the other room in Juneau that would like to testify? Mr. Boyer, if you want to come on up and put your name and affiliation on the record and plan 3 minutes.
Yes, thank you through Chair Wilson and committee members. It's a privilege to be here. My name is Eric Boyer. I'm a program officer with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and I also serve as the chair of the Alaska Healthcare Workforce Coalition. Just 1 year ago, we were here talking Senate Bill 93, which was Sharp 3, and that was passed. And thinking about initiatives like that from the Healthcare Workforce Coalition, it's innovative solutions that you all agreed with in the communities to try to look at how to expand our workforce, meet people where they're at, and get the care and treatment. And just like that, I think Senate Bill 134, expanding the number of behavioral health practitioners who can bill for Medicaid services, will increase that responsiveness to our healthcare community to treat people experiencing behavioral health disorders when they need help versus being put on a wait list. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority is concerned about our trust beneficiaries and how we can improve their lives. Beneficiaries include Alaskans with mental illness, substance use disorder, developmental disabilities, Alzheimer's and related dementia, and traumatic brain injury. In partnership with the Department of Health and Social Services, the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority ensures Alaska has a comprehensive, integrated system of care to provide the necessary services and support for beneficiaries as close to home as possible. And on that, we would like to support Senate Bill 134 And thank you for your time, Chair Wilson and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. It looks like we may have Mr. Black back with us.
Good afternoon, Committee Chair Wilson and members of the committee. My name is Don Black. I am a patient of the board and a board member at the Bethel Family Clinic. Our clinic employs one licensed clinical social worker, an LCSW, one licensed professional counselor, LCP, and have an employee working towards his LCP in our behavioral health department. We provide services to teens at the Bethel Youth Facility in efforts to reverse destructive habits while these students are still young. Our substance abuse programs are embedded in the community as well as at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Correctional Facility, where our staff provide group and individualized guidance. These services are also delivered to court and medically referred patients. We receive patients from the local community as well as from surrounding villages. As a safety net medical facility, some of our services are provided without pay in our efforts to maintain the health of our community. Such is the case with services provided by our LPC for Medicaid patients, many of which are youth from our villages where suicide rates are high, even by Alaskan standards. Our greater mission is to provide for the health of our community. So we do this sometimes without pay. To achieve that, we serve those in need, period. However, our LPC provides the same level of care as our LCSW. The work of our LPC is recognized as equivalent and payable by private insurers as the work of our LCSW. However, this same work of our LPC is not recognized and payable by the state's Medicaid policies. In a time in which there is focus on addressing the opioid crisis, we find that one of our hands is tied behind our back. Our delivery of services is restricted simply because the history of how the licensing process for our LCSW and LCP positions developed in our state. SB 134 unties that hand. Thank you for your thoughtful consideration and support of SB 134.
Thank you, Mr. Black. All right, see, no one else has joined us. I think there's one more person in the room that would like to testify.
Petersburg LAO has a testifier.
Oh. Okay, we'll go to them next. And if you want to put yourself on the record and plan 3 minutes for your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman and committee members. My name is Julie Thompson. I am a licensed professional counselor, having graduated with my master's in mental health counseling in 2007. Currently having 13 years experience specializing in trauma-informed interventions for people with a diagnosis of PTSD and substance use disorder. I previously spent 2 years working as a clinician for YKHC, a Yagnarvik Healing Center, working with clients, and I was able to support individuals in their efforts towards recovery of their substance use disorder. Over 90% of these clients suffer from coexisting disorders, usually PTSD, often secondary to trauma experienced as children. Having grown up in severely dysfunctional homes due to their own parents' unresolved and untreated traumatic histories. I now work for Bethel Family Clinic as a mental health clinician. However, since I am no longer under the IHS umbrella, I'm not recognized by Medicaid as a clinical provider. This itself is tragic, as our agency is a primary partner with the Children's Advocacy Center, whose primary mission is to provide timely interventions to children who have been identified as victims of sexual abuse and trauma. Our center currently employs two clinicians, myself, the LPC, and my colleague who is a licensed clinical social worker. Our center has been trying to recruit another social worker clinician for over a year. As we have been unsuccessful in this effort, we currently are limited to having one provider, our social worker, to meet the needs of the Children's Advocacy Center. It's not uncommon for us to have 7 referrals in a week from the CAC Center. At this time, none of which we can respond to. We will not only save millions of dollars by allowing LPCs access to Medicaid reimbursement, money that we're now spending on emergency room visits, medevac services, or legal interventions, we are ultimately saving lives, which at the end of the day is why I'm here. Please support SB 134 and help us help these children, help us save their lives. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't see the name of the person at the Petersburg LIO, but if they want to put themselves on the record in any affiliation, plan 3 minutes for their testimony.
Thank you, Senators. My name is Jay Stanton Greger. I am here representing myself. I'm a licensed professional counselor in private practice here in town. My wife and I have owned True North Counseling and Consultation for the last 7 years. Again, I thank you all for bringing forth Senate Bill 134. I'm excited that 134 is before you and hopeful it will pass. Senate Bill 134 will allow the most vulnerable in our population to have the same access to high-quality mental health services as people with private insurance or the ability to pay out of pocket. For example, I feel confident in that our town of 3,000 people, a private practice could thrive seeing only Medicaid clients. The passage of Senate Bill 134 will most certainly lead to reductions in costly emergency room visits and acute mental health crises, because as we know, preventative care is highly effective in mitigating mental health emergencies. If Senate Bill 134 passes, it will be one of the rare times the state of Alaska will save lots of money on mental health care for our most vulnerable while also drastically improving the mental health care for the same population. It's truly a win-win situation, and I'm so glad you guys have it before you. And as an LPC, I do my job because I want to help people be well and improve the quality of their lives. It's disappointing to be unable to serve our most vulnerable populations, given the way the laws are structured now. I've sent a letter to the committee. If anyone is ever so inclined, or anybody's staff, feel free to reach out via email or phone, and I'd be glad to speak with any of you about the topic. Again, I thank you so much for taking my testimony, and again, thank you, Senator Wilson, for bringing this forward. Good day.
Thank you, sir. All right. I don't see anyone else online. Anyone else in the other, any LIOs? Okay. Anyone else in the room in Juneau? All right. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. So any other questions for the bill sponsor at this time? All right. Seeing none, what we'll do is we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside. I just want to thank everyone who came out and testified, and thanks for those providers and the work that they do. That concludes our business for this afternoon. Monday's meeting has been canceled due to some scheduling conflicts. We'll reschedule the initial hearing on Senate Bill 179, Nursing Licensure Multi-State Compact, and Wednesday's meeting will be SJR 13 by Senator Hughes, a constitutional amendment. We are adjourned at 2:41 p.m. Thank you.